practices for virtual advocacy in Nevada's courts. Jamie, will you go ahead and do a roll call for us?
Justice Herndon.
Present.
Justice Lee.
Present.
Justice Perry-Gary.
Here.
Judge Burton. Judge Clark Newberry.
Present.
Thank you. Mike Doan. Judge Dollinger.
Present.
Thank you. Steve Grierson. Evie Grosnick.
Present.
Thank you. Judge Hill.
Present.
Darren Imlay.
Present.
Thank you. Judge Jones. Chris Lawley.
Present.
Thank you. Alicia LaRude.
Present.
Thank you. Judge Leung. Chris Long. Judge Mathis.
Present.
Leslie Nino Pirro.
Present.
Thank you. Jennifer Noble.
Present.
Thank you. Jonathan Norman.
Present.
Thank you. Professor Regalia. Judge Saragosa. Judge Sullivan. Judge Tyrus. And Judge Terrell.
Present.
Okay, we do have a quorum.
All right, perfect. Thank you. So we have some previous meeting summaries that we need to get approved. So we're going to work through those first, which I think goes all the way back to April of last year, actually. We never had quorums there at the end of 22 to be able to approve the minutes from those meeting summaries. Does anybody have anything that they wanted to add or corrections to make to the April 15th, 2022 meeting summaries? See no hands. How about the December 2nd, 2022 meeting summaries? And lastly, the July 11th, 2023 meeting summaries. All right, anybody want to make a motion to approve those three last three meeting summaries?
This is Christopher Lawley. I would move to approve them.
Thank you, Chris. Second?
I'll second.
Thank you, Judge Dollinger. Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Anyone opposed?
Aye.
I'll take that as an aye, a late aye. All right, we'll unanimously approve, Jamie, the last three meeting summaries. And then kind of get to where we are today, which is trying to move us towards finishing up our work and getting everything in place. Did everybody have an opportunity to review the meeting materials, including the latest revisions to the preamble and rules, as well as the exhibits with the various subcommittee case types attached? All right.
Yes, Judge Herndon, I had one comment regarding the criminal presumptive rules. I don't know if you want to take that up now or later.
So, Chris, are you speaking to the what's going to be presumptively in person versus what's going to be presumptively virtual?
Correct.
Okay, let's hold off on just a second. Let me work through first the revisions that were made to the preamble and the remote virtual hearing procedures. Let me set aside for a moment the late addition to that on the legal aid attorney's part of it, because all the other parts of it, I think, had been edited and circulated prior to that. Was there anybody that had any other additions that they wanted to make to that, to the latest version of that?
Justice Herndon, this is Patty Lee. I don't know if we're going to talk about this later, but we were meeting in the limited jurisdiction subcommittee, and there was a request that perhaps the presumptions would not apply to the limited jurisdictions given the diverse nature of each limited jurisdiction. It's kind of hard to uniformly create presumptions based on what they do, where they're located, their resources, and whatnot. So I don't know if that's an appropriate time, or if now is an appropriate time to talk about that, but I know that we briefly talked about perhaps adding something in that preamble that says they'll be exempted from the presumptions. The preamble would otherwise apply to them, but not the actual check the box presumption. So
meaning the what's presumptively in person, what's presumptively virtual part of things.
Right. It's okay. Just so varied in terms of what the capabilities are, the realities are, the limited jurisdictions, and we couldn't get any real uniformity because what's good for one is horribly bad for the other, and vice versa. Overall, though, the preamble language, I think they were fine with. And if anyone else is on here from the limiteds, feel free to chime in. But the what is presumptively in person versus remote, there's just no ability to launch on those issues, given the great diversity between the limited jurisdictions.
Well, my sense is from the chief, from Justice Stiglitz, is that she doesn't want to excise out any particular court system when we're coming up with rules or ideas for rules for the entirety of the state court system. And so my suggestion was going to be, in talking to those folks today from limited jurisdiction, was that we sit back down and try and come up with some common ground there, because I don't think anybody wants us, i.e. the Supreme Court, just saying, here's what it's going to be. If you can't agree on anything, here's what it's going to be. Because my conversations with Justice Stiglitz kind of leads me to conclude, and I think that's what Justice Hardesty was communicating to me last year as well, that one of the reasons for establishing the commission and trying to do what we're going to do is the input from the bar that wanted some consistency in how everybody was dealing with things. And I get it that there's a diversity within the limited jurisdictions. There's a diversity within the district courts, from the 8th versus Washoe County versus Lyon County versus Elko County, et cetera, right? There's always going to be a diversity when we move around the state and what resources are available, what attorneys are available, how they choose and want to handle their matters. But the overarching thing that I think we were all viewed as very important from the beginning was that nothing in here is mandatory, right? The courts always have some discretion to establish how they want to handle particular things. So even though things may be presumptively in person, the courts always, and I certainly don't want a court to say, well, I know it's presumptively in person, but I'm never going to do that. But they have the ability to kind of work with the attorneys within each jurisdiction to figure out how they're going to handle things based on that moment in time, right? So I would hope that our limited jurisdiction folks can kind of get back together. I know there was some diversity of opinion between the larger jurisdictions versus the less populous jurisdictions about what they thought should be presumptively this versus that. But for the most part, it seemed like, or at least about half of the things they discussed, you all were able to come up with some recommendations with uniformity amongst yourselves. And I would think that we could do that with the other things as well.
Justice Herndon, this is Judge Clark Newberry. We had talked about during the subcommittee for civil that if we soften the language and go away from always, nevers, and other types of foreclosing type language, and then provide, as we have in the proposed civil portion, that if we allow for the other jurisdictions to propose their own rules specific to the needs and the technological limitations, really, of those particular courts, then the rules would be congruent and allow for each of those, each of the different district courts and justice courts, et cetera, across the board, to render those rules that apply to their particular needs.
Meaning we essentially, don't take this the wrong way, but meaning essentially we blow up the commission and just go back to each county and say, 8th Judicial District Court, make your own rules for your court system?
Well, I think, no, it's just a carve out. So there would be still these presumptions, but let's say, I think one of the things they had talked about, and perhaps Judge Dollinger could address it, because I think she brought it up relative to some of the guardianship issues, that there might be certain presumptions in a particular jurisdiction where in person is impractical. And therefore they might have a rule that says this particular case in this particular jurisdiction for the following reasons is not presumptively in person of transportation issues because of the various things that could fall into that. But I think if we saw, I'm not saying blow up the commission at all, because I do know there's a desire for uniformity across the state. But if you soften the language to just allow that authority for unique circumstances for there to be a deviation, because there are certain courts that just don't have the same technology as Eighth Judicial does.
Justice Herndon, this is Christopher Lawley. And again, I'm not in one of those sort of more rural jurisdictions or limited jurisdiction courts. I'm a guy here in the Eighth. My thinking is, I like the idea of uniformity. If we're going to have rules, there should be statewide rules, period. I do believe there are enough off-ramps, for lack of a better word, within these proposed procedures that if a presumption doesn't work for a particular court, they can follow the rules that are prescribed here and have an in-person hearing. Or if in-person doesn't work, they can follow the rules that are set forth here and have a virtual meeting for whatever reason. So I'm a big proponent of we ought to have uniform statewide rules. And if we need more off-ramps, for lack of a better word, let's add those. But I think there's enough flexibility within the rules to accommodate everyone.
Well, and that's what we had discussed in our civil subcommittee meeting, creating those, softening some of that language, because I agree with you, Chris, that there's plenty of off ramps here, and I don't see it as hamstringing anybody to make a determination that deviates from the presumption. I don't see it.
So, when you all talk about softening language within the 30,000 foot view of things, the preamble, the remote virtual hearing procedures part of it, before we get to the presumptions, I know we took out always, thought in a couple of places,
in several places.
What else was it in there that, you all thought needed to be modified in some fashion?
Well, the last draft that I've got, we changed some language. For instance, in accordance with the court rules, should any party wish to deviate from the presumption virtual or presumptively in-person hearing format as outlined in the attached presumptive case types, please refer the following procedures to request accommodation from the court. And that's primarily with the parties, but the judge has discretion to deviate anytime the judge feels it's necessary.
The question that I have, and this is Judge Saragosa, being a limited court that's of extraordinarily high volume, in which doing virtual hearings is like coming to a screeching halt to call a case in my department, just technology-wise, everything, it makes it really challenging. I have two issues. One, when I have to issue a written order to a defendant and they're not present in the courtroom, that's a major challenge to me. In my court, I issue a lot of orders to stay out of a resort corridor area or certain geographical areas. And there's a written order that I give to a defendant that has an expiration date. It gets then put into scope. So there's a process there. I work around it by requiring them to appear via Blue Jeans. And then we have to email it over to them. I make them acknowledge receipt of it on the record. I mean, there's things that we can work around. But I think of DV cases where there's an admonishment of rights form that would have to be prepared ahead, and every we can work around most of it. But if there's enough, as Christopher said, off ramps where we can say, all right, this just doesn't work for this particular calendar or this particular case, are we going to be in a situation where we can make that a local rule, if you will, ahead of time, so that the rules are known that we're deviating in this one small area or one particular off-ramp, rather than I get to a hearing, I determine that it's just not working, it's not possible, and then I have to reschedule it for another day. That's one of the things I was trying to kind of figure out, if it was possible on the off-ramps to make those known in advance so that we're not, I don't know. you know, there's other problems with filling out contact information sheet for people that are there for an initial appearance. My JEA does that ahead of time now when somebody calls and asks for permission to appear via Blue Jeans, or completion of the financial affidavit. If I don't have one, I don't even know to appoint counsel. I either have to do that verbally on the record and take up more time, or I have to find a way to do that in advance, because I just can't do it as we would normally do. When they walk in the courtroom, my marshal hands them a clipboard, they fill it out. When I call the case, it's done. So I'm just trying to figure out how this group feels about a limited court coming up with off-ramp rules.
I think that is kind of individual to you, right? There may be some judges that say, I'm okay doing this type of a hearing with people remote, and I'll make it work. I don't have enough room in my courtroom, whatever it is, right? And other judges that say, no, I want to eyeball people on these things and know that they're feeling it out. So since what we're doing is presumptions and gives you the ultimate authority to decide whether, you know, I know that this is presumed in person, but for my practice, I'm going to have people coming to court on that. Then you're going to communicate to Darren and Chris and whomever else, your contract attorneys, that these things are going to require you to be, you know, in person in court, absent some, you know, other circumstance where they can, you know, Darren's attorneys can reach out and say, hey, on this particular one, my client lives in Spain right now. Can we do this virtually, whatever it may be? But I don't think anything that we're doing, let me put it this way. I think that there's a massive off-ramp for what we're doing on anything, particularly with the judge, that you can establish a particular protocol on how you're handling things in your courtroom, despite the presumptions, because of how things work in your particular courtroom. Just like Judge Bishop may do it exactly right, the opposite, using that same theory of an off-ramp in his jurisdiction, because for him it works, you know, he needs to do it the other way, whatever it may be, which is why I think we tried to keep the preamble and the rules procedures very, very broad. It just in terms of, here's what we're talking about doing. There's going to be these presumptions, and make sure you're notifying your fellow attorneys and the courts and what have you, if we're going to, you know, request to change something from one thing to the other, as opposed to restricting. And I thought that when we wrote all that part of it up, I don't know that we ever used any kind of shall language or must language or anything to create anything mandatory about those aspects of things.
I'm good with that. I just wanted to make sure that the presumptions, you know, when we say, yeah, there are exceptions and off ramps or the like, that if we did, because of a certain type of case or hearing or calendar or whatever, come up with a local rule that said, yeah, I know that's what the Supreme Court said, it's an assumption or a presumption, but we're begging off of that. So I just wanted to make sure that that wasn't going to be offensive and deemed to be, you know, kind of bucking the system, which is not intended. It's more,
I mean, look, for instance, case specific. You know, in the criminal side of things, focused on the district courts, obviously, you know, we proposed that arraignments that don't involve guilty pleas be virtual. For purpose of the justice court, you may say, we get a lot of things handled when people show up in person on those, right? And so to the extent we can do that, maybe you want those to be in person, or particular case types within general arraignments to be in person, because you think it behooves the clients and the attorneys and efficiency to have people on domestic violence arraignments come to court. Whereas right. you're charged, you got a petty larceny citation, you know, we don't care about that when you can appear virtually. I think that like I said, to me, it's a massive off-ramp that provides you the flexibility to do what you need to do.
All right.
More flexibility than I think actually the Supreme Court rules that everybody was kind of also adhering to when we dealt with telephonic transmission provide.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Ron, do you disagree with that, or Patty? I mean, that kind of statement
about I agree.
Off ramp.
Yeah.
That helps. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Yeah, I think so too. Sorry.
Go ahead, Patty.
I was just looking for the presumption language to see if it said anything there about the ability to kind of rebut those presumptions as needed by the courts or at the request of the parties. And I'm sorry, I can't find the most recent version. I'm looking right now. But it might be helpful to put something like that in there, just as instructive. You know, I mean, I think the language is aspirational in and of itself, so it kind of suggests that. But if we want to add some clarity to say that these presumptions, you know, are rebuttable and the court always has the ability to, you know, tailor the presumptions as needed on any individual case or at the request of the parties.
This is Janelle. I have a couple of thoughts. One is, this is not a free-for-all. There are some circumstances that have to be in person. We are doing trials in person. The client has, in a criminal case, a constitutional right to an in-person proceeding. And no judge can say, no, we're going to do that virtually without consent. So there are some limitations here. Also, I'm going back to the rules of criminal procedure, where we spend a lot of time working out the basic premise that people who practice throughout the state, they're licensed throughout the state, should have some predictability when they're walking into a courtroom about what's to happen. And we saw a need for uniformity. I don't think that should be thrown out, and I don't mean this disparagingly, but for judicial whim. I think that if in a particular case there's a reason to do something, you've got the off-ramp, but I don't think that any court should be coming in and saying, I don't like these rules, I'm not going to follow them. I'm going to come up with my own set because I think it's a better situation. Either let's have uniformity or not. But if we're just saying these are some ideas that you might want to consider, I don't know, I got better things to do. This is, what's the point?
Well, I don't know that it's a strictly something that I view as aspirational. But I do think that I trust judges in their courtrooms to figure out particular case types that may lend themselves because of their jurisdiction to something that's going to work better, even though something may be presumptively virtual or presumptively in person. And I don't want to take that away. Look, this is, we're going to finish this up and roll this out. And I am sure that as we get feedback on it, it may be that we say, hey, we need to look at this now, or we need to look at that now, right? We're doing the best we can to accommodate what happened and how law is being practiced right now and make accommodations for things that we think would be more efficient for attorneys and the public to make appearances in certain cases. And hopefully it'll work out, right? But yes, I agree with you, Janelle, as I've said a couple of times, I don't expect a judge to say, hey, I get these, but I'm not following any of them. If you don't do that, then I guess you're opening yourself up to a judicial discipline complaint, right? Because we have these guidelines that you're supposed to be following and you just willy-nilly say no. If you are saying, I know these are supposed to be like what Melissa's talking about. These are supposed to be, and I apologize, I just always have this habit of using people's first names instead of our superhero names, so excuse me. But you know, when Melissa's talking about, I have these certain things that I like people to be in court so I can, they're filling these things out and it makes what we're doing so much more efficient and creates less hearings and da 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 da. That's making a record of good cause why you want to do something a certain way that maybe we decided should be presumptively virtual. So I totally get it. That's different than, I know that we have this commission that said we should do these things this way, but I'm just doing them the other way because I feel like it, right? I mean, I don't, that's going to be a problem. That's going to get people written up. That's going to get people with complaints filed against them because, yeah, we do expect that you'll try and take what we've come up with here and apply it in your courtrooms as best as you can. But let me ask a question, Melissa. Understanding the conversation that you and I had earlier, do you think that the limited jurisdiction group, if you're to get back together, can come up with more, you know, solid recommendations instead of so much, which was, we want it this way, we want it that way?
It's really hard. And honestly, Justice Herndon, I wish I could say yes, but I really don't think so. Because as you put it, you know, the judge in Elko or Ely, who has a very small number of cases, has the ability to handle virtual appearances so much easier than we do in the high volume courts. I mean, Judge Leung and I participated in the subcommittee meetings, and it was really hard to find common ground between what we thought was reasonable and what Judge Bishop thought was reasonable, not because of just minds disagreeing, but just because of our caseloads being so incredibly different. And, you know, we do, at least here, we deal a lot of cases, a lot of the misdemeanor cases on early offers. And it's literally impossible for me to appoint an attorney on a virtual client and ask that public defender to then step out of the courtroom to make a private phone call, expect the defendant, they can hardly figure out how to unmute and mute themselves half the time. Now I got to have them figure out how to mute themselves, take a phone call, then get back on, enter a plea. There's just a lot of moving parts when I have, you know, over 100 cases on my calendar in the morning.
Right.
If everyone was virtual, I don't think we would ever get any business done. So I do envision having the necessity to use the off ramp for some specific types of cases like that.
What was the theory? Because I was a little surprised when I saw some of the disagreements were on things like trials, evidentiary hearings, testifying witnesses, that Judge Tyrus and Judge Bishop were saying they preferred virtual on those things. To me, those are the things that we want in person. When you're got people testifying and introducing evidence and whatnot. So I was a little confused as to why that was, they wanted that presumptively virtual. And anybody that happened to be in those subcommittee meetings that wants to speak to that, feel free.
All I can say is that, you know, their calendars are much smaller and they just have a preference to do everything virtually. And I feel like they thought they could just handle it that way. And, you know, I don't know whether the judge was in the courtroom doing virtual court or like our preamble kind of envisions, or whether the judge was at home doing court. That might have been part of the factor, but I don't know. I mean, I could tell you from our larger courts down here, Judge Leung on behalf of the municipal court and me on behalf of justice court, we felt the same way when you're doing trials and admitting evidence and things like small claims cases where people are trying to bring in all of their documents and they don't really know what's relevant and not, and you got to kind of sort through them. All of that stuff is really difficult to do. We've tried to implement procedures where they email them ahead of time, but then the clerk's got to go through a bunch of stuff, and a good percent of those cases never actually go to a hearing. So the clerk was spending an inordinate amount of time going through and trying to sort through documents on a small claims case that never actually went to a hearing. So it just ended up being some inefficiencies when you have a large volume that I don't know if I could say anything more about their thoughts on trials and evidentiary hearings, but those are our concerns. Okay. It's really difficult in eviction cases as well, not to have all those documents right there in front of you to be able to look at.
Natalie, did you have anything you wanted to add on the limited jurisdiction piece?
Yeah, I mean, I'm obviously in agreement with a lot of what Melissa is saying, because we have tried. I mean, I've indulged virtual, and I have it every single day. On every single calendar, be it a criminal eviction or a small claim. And I have tried to impose requirements. When they ask for a hearing, I'll say, you know, if you want to, for example, small claims, if you want to submit something, and then I call the case and they say, oh, we emailed it here or we emailed it there. And so we're actually not getting it. And so then we have to continue the hearing. So we're seeing that some of those workarounds don't really work so well. You know, obviously Melissa's absolutely on. Everything goes smoother when we call cases and people are there and they can respond. But, you know, we're doing it and we're willing to continue to do it as much as we can, but our preference is in person.
Lori, what about your justice court?
So I agree with Judge Tyrell and Judge Sergos that it's the difference in volume. So out at Fernley, doing the, if I'm doing traffic arraignments, I don't have 200 people in my courtroom for that session. I have 50. And so it takes me 2 hours to get through 50 people, and it works for me. Bench trials are absolutely in person. Small claims are absolutely in person. Evictions, anytime where they have to submit evidence, it's a nightmare. It's an absolute nightmare. And I prefer.
It's a nightmare. I'm sorry to interrupt. It's a nightmare if it's virtual.
If it's virtual.
Okay.
In small claims, preliminary hearings, eviction hearings, not civil justice actions so much, but basically those three hearings, it's a nightmare. And I prefer virtual court, believe it or not. I okay. prefer it. But the volume is what makes the difference in whether it works or not. Judge Bishop and Judge Tyrus, they're like, we can do prelims virtually because they don't have a large volume of it. But one of the biggest things for Judge Bishop is his attorneys live out of the area.
Right.
So his public defender and his DA may travel from a different area for a 5-minute continuance. You know, everybody says we're going to go to prelim, and then 5 minutes before it settles. So I don't know if that helps any, but
right.
we prefer virtual for the majority of everything, but there's a huge difference between Fernley Justice Court and Las Vegas Justice Court in volumes, and they can't be compared. What works for Vegas?
It sounds like, despite the 180 degree opposite disparity between Fernley and Las Vegas, you and Melissa and Natalie in North Las Vegas all kind of have agreement on these things need to be, are so much easier and more efficient to do in person.
But then you talk to Judge Bishop and it's not the same.
What I'm kind of leaning towards here, Jamie, is Ron and Patty and I and the limited jurisdiction subcommittee get all together again and see if we can all kind of noodle this a little bit and come up. I love that word because Lydia uses it all the time.
She does.
if we can find some common ground here, because I don't think it's really that far off, understanding that a judge would have some discretion to, and look, it sounds like what Judge Bishop is talking about, when the attorneys are out of the jurisdiction, that would be attorney driven, right? Hey, can we do this virtually? Because we don't want to have to drive there for a 5-minute status check kind of thing, which would be great, right? I'm sure if you had attorneys that were in Elko and Reno on a case that reached out to Melissa and said, hey, rather than coming to court for this, we've got this resolved. Can we do virtual appearance? Fine, no worries, right? But it's just are we presuming things to be in person because of a case type, understanding the courts still have some discretion as to how they're going to handle things if there's good cause to do it a different way. I just think that we can come up with some definitive recommendations, yeah, even in that.
Justice Herndon, in looking at kind of the presumptions that we have now, I actually do think it might be beneficial to get back together again with you and Justice Perigree and Justice Lee, because I do think it's easier for us to have our presumptions on things like trials and evidentiary hearings to be in person. And then if Judge Bishop wants to allow them to appear virtually because, you know, it's easier for his counsel or even the litigants or whoever, witnesses, then it's easier for him to allow that to happen rather than setting a hard and fast rule. And when we were meeting in our subcommittee, it felt like we were trying to come up with an agreement on a rule rather than a presumption. So I kind of think that now that we're working with the presumption, it might be easier for us to find some common ground in that respect.
Well, and I'd also like to, and I didn't realize this until I was going back and looking at a lot of things. For whatever reason, your subcommittee had no attorneys on it. And so
that's true.
I'll talk to Jamie and we can make sure we invite Chris and Darren and Jonelle and Jennifer and Evie and maybe if you all have some ideas about people you know of, anybody that's on my screen right now that travels, right, that does cases in other jurisdictions. And by that, I mean other counties, that we could get involved as well, because I'd like to get their aspect of what these presumptions should look like as well, instead of it just being us judges kind of sitting around talking about things.
Well, I think we need to incorporate some rural attorneys if that's what you're going to do.
Yeah.
And Jamie, just a question, because I expected Judge Bishop, Judge Tyrus to be here. And do you know what happened?
Judge Bishop has a full calendar, and I did not hear from Judge Tyrus.
And Jamie, make a note to include Marcy on that meeting that we set up as well. Because Marcy, I'm guessing your people go a lot of places.
Thank you, Judge. This is Marcy. Yes, we would love to be included and get this issue out to our rural attorneys so we can get their feedback. Thank you for that invite.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. All right. So let's table the limited jurisdiction part of it right now, because I don't want to give up on getting them on board with everything. But let me just go back to, for instance, let's go to criminal first. Was there anything that anybody in the criminal subcommittees had to make any edits or modifications? I know I've asked that on multiple occasions previously, and I felt like we were pretty good on our presumptive recommendations.
Judge Herndon, this is Christopher Lawley. The only thing that I saw with respect to criminal is that preliminary grand juries are included and they're presumptively in person. Preliminary hearings are not on the list. I think my suggestion would be to add preliminary hearings and to make them presumptively in person.
Hold on a second here. I thought we had that.
There's a section for evidentiary hearing, but not preliminary hearing. This is Darren Emily. I would agree with Christopher on that.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you all. I think we had in the original chart that we worked up, I think we compressed it down somewhat when we created the exhibits. So let me go back and find the original. We had it on there. I don't know how we would have forgot that. But yeah, look, I 100% agree with you, and I'm going to guess Jonelle and Jennifer, Tierra would as well, but you all would agree with presumptively in person for preliminary hearings. I think probably it was that we just kind of considered that a hearing where there's a presentation of witnesses and evidence, and so it's going to be presumptively in person. But we can certainly make a specific designation for that. And
then there are certain, you know, statutory exceptions for witness appearances and things like that. The other thing that's not on here are pretrial release hearings. Now, I know we don't have witnesses on those, but counsel on those, and that's the whole kind of Valdez Jimenez hearing isn't included on here. And from a justice court perspective or limited court perspective, we don't have probation revocations, but we do have hearings to revoke suspended sentences. So maybe we could make that probation revocation kind of all encompassing. The other thing we do a lot of down here with our pretrial compliance unit is if there's a non-compliance with any sort of pretrial compliance condition, we will have order to show cause hearings, which should be presumptively in person. They potentially could result in the revocation of one's OR status or maybe a modification of the conditions of their release. Those things are kind of more unique to this limited courts, and I don't see them contemplated on this chart.
Let me clarify one thing, because I had a note about that, and thanks for bringing that up, Melissa. The civil criminal family, we need a designation on there, Jamie, that those are geared towards the state district courts. That's why we have a whole separate limited jurisdiction part of it, so that there's nothing that the district courts are doing with their civil criminal family that somehow conflicts with how justice courts and the municipal courts wanted to create rules for themselves. Does that make sense? So I didn't want, Melissa, for instance, for us to say, hey, district court, this is how we handle these things. And so justice court has to go along with that. That's why just the limited jurisdictions were a whole separate subcommittee, because a lot of times how you all do bail hearings is because you do a lot higher volume than they do in district court. So there may be differences as to how you want to apply those things.
And Jamie, just to note, I don't know why it's on the civil cases presumption list, but we've got the criminal matters on our civil sheet, entry of plea, presumed in person, probation revocation, presumptively in person, order show cause, bail hearing, sentencing, presumptively in person. So I'm not sure why that's on the civil. It's something that was on our sheet. Do you see what I'm talking about?
I do. That was a carryover from how Justice Hardesty had it set up. I'm not sure how it ended on there.
But it's not on the criminal sheet, and that's why it's just a little odd. I was just looking at the criminal presumptions from one of their meetings, and those aren't contained in there.
Okay, we can add them in.
Okay, take it off ours.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll flip that over. I'm not sure why Jim had that on that part of things.
Justice Herndon, can I just ask Judge Saragosa, do you think, Judge, that the Valdez hearings or the order to show cause hearings or the, hey, I want to impose a suspended jail time hearings, I sort of view all of those as evidentiary hearings, and rather than have a very long and precise list, I sort of think it fits under the category of evidentiary hearings, but that's just my thought. I don't know if anybody else thinks differently on that.
Well, Valdez-Ximenez hearings can be, this is Darren Emley, can be done virtually. AB 4-24 allowed that. So defendants can appear virtually as well as counsel. And we need that to continue to make the deadlines that AB 4-24 imposed.
And that might be, Darren, why it's not included on here, because if it was in statute, there'd be no reason to put a rule in place that says the same thing as the statute. That might be why.
Well, that's a good point. I forgot everybody appears virtually on those things.
Oh, that's the other reason. I'm sorry. Why I've got a foggy brain right now. That's the other reason we don't have preliminary hearings on here, is because that's a limited jurisdiction proceeding. So we were focused, again, general criminal, civil, family court on the state district courts, limited jurisdiction dealing with their hearings.